Hi, everybody. Thanks for to everyone for joining us for our training today on compassion fatigue and self-care. I'm Allie Thomas, your HR director, and it's my honor and pleasure to introduce our speaker today, Patrick Malloy, who is a licensed professional clinical counselor supervisor. There's a few letters behind his name. And he comes to us with over 20 years of experience in the mental health field and comes to us via Ease at Work, our employee assistance program, which I'll give them a quick plug to let you guys know that Ease is always available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to assist you in the areas of counseling, wellness, legal and financial issues, and dependent care. Also, their website got updated quite dramatically earlier this year when they were bought by All One Health. So there's a lot of resources out there, including a discount shopping program for those shoppers out there like me. So be sure to check that out. I've been lucky enough to know Patrick, and I'm probably going to shock Patrick here. Patrick, we've known each other for like 15 years now, I think. Wow. Because Patrick and I used to work together. So when Ease at Work recommended him as a speaker, I knew we were in great shape. Also, if you have questions during today's session, we'd prefer for everybody to use the Zoom group chat. And we're going to save about 10 or 15 minutes at the end of the session where I can ask Patrick the questions that appear in the chat. So without further ado, Patrick, over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Allie. And hello, Cleveland Sight Center. It's good to be with you today, and thank you for all the work that you do each and every day. So as Allie said, I work with Ease sometimes, and I also work at Cornerstone of Hope, which is a bereavement center in Independence, Ohio. We work with people who've lost a loved one to any number of reasons, you know, traumatic loss, traumatic death. People that die of old age. I mean, we'll work with anybody who has had a loss. And so I see a lot of grief and trauma here, and that's what I want to fold into the presentation today as well. So Allie and I are just going to go, I'll be saying next slide, which in fact, Allie, you can go to the next slide now. okay. So let me go to my next slide too here. What we're going to talk about is compassion fatigue, and I'm going to do it a little bit differently today than maybe what you have heard before. We're certainly going to look at the self-care component and ways that you can help when you feel compassion fatigue, so we'll look at that. But I'm going to fold in some information about trauma and grief.
You're going out?
Because I think that is all connected with compassion fatigue, okay? I'm going to define compassion fatigue as vicarious trauma, which means that, we're good on that slide there, Allie, thanks, which means that we pick up on the trauma of other people and the grief of other people. So just keep that in mind for now, and we'll unpack that some more later. We're going to look today at some causes of compassion fatigue. How does it come about? And is there a process? And what we'll discover is there is a process to compassion fatigue that goes on the one end of the scale from feeling it and feeling a little bit worn out in some ways to a complete, what some people call burnout. And I'll address that term a little bit later too. So what to keep in mind right now, there's a process of compassion fatigue. If you can understand that process and some of the signs of it, then you can mitigate it. You can learn how to do some things differently so that you don't progress down the line further and further into compassion fatigue, and it causes you some grief and pain yourselves. So we'll look at that process, and then we will look at ways that if you find yourself in the process of, I got compassion fatigue going on. We'll look at ways that self-care can help you. And you'll see that there's different areas of life that when we address our own care for ourselves, we can help lower the amount of compassion fatigue that we have and actually reverse that into what is called compassion satisfaction, which you know, is a really nice place to be, because you know you're helping people and you're feeling good about it. So as I said, we will talk about grief and trauma along with compassion fatigue. We're going to look at how they're related, because you can get traumatized by another person's grief and trauma. And that kind of situation weighs on you and promotes compassion fatigue. So we have to know that, and we have to know what to do about it. Unhealed losses from grief get acted out somehow in people, okay? And when you're with your clients, you're going to pick up on that. You might not realize it, but you're going to pick up on that in some way. There's an old saying that says, people who don't heal from their wounds bleed on those who didn't cut them. People who don't heal from their wounds bleed on those who didn't cut them. And what I'm suggesting is that the unhealed wounds that clients bring when you work with them, from grief, trauma, loss, they're going to bring that forward, and it's going to impact you in some way. You're going to feel it. So learning about grief and trauma along with compassion fatigue can help you cope with the grief and trauma of your clients, which is one of the factors that promotes compassion fatigue. All right. Okay. Now, when I present, I'm usually very interactive. Usually it's face-to-face, which we're kind of face-to-face when we're, you know, when we're virtual, right? But I usually encourage questions throughout, and there's discussion, or I'll ask you to think about things. We don't have that ability today. So as Ali said, we'll do questions at the end. But what I'm going to do, though, is from time to time, I'm going to pause and I'm going to ask you to think about something that I said, or write it down. I may ask you to write something down. And these are things for you to reflect on. And I think the presentation will be more interactive for you if you choose to do that. So when I at times say, okay, I want you to reflect on this or think about that, we'll just take a minute so you can do that. Okay? Now, so I know, are you seeing me as I talk? Or hearing me?
Yes, I was going to say a lot of folks are muted, but yes.
You do see me? Okay. I'm using my hands a lot.
And I'm on.
Just one.
I'm
sure.
On phones, and I do hear you.
Okay, great.
Loud and clear.
Awesome. All right, so we're all good. Fantastic. All right. So a few years ago, when you were younger, when you were a kid, you know, in school, they say, "Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up?" I wonder how many of you said, I want to be a helping professional. Maybe in some ways we said that. I want to be a policeman, or I want to be a fireman or something like that. Someone who's helping other people. How and when did you decide that? And then the other thing is, how and when did you decide that you wanted to do what you're doing now and be with people, and to serve them as you do? Because I think it's important for us to revisit our reasons that we get into a helping profession, so that we remember that we made a choice to do this. It's a daily choice we make to embrace the work we do, because choice is empowerment. And I try to remember this regularly. You know, I work with grieving clients, and I supervise staff that do the same, and I have to come in every day and I remind myself of why I'm here, particularly when a particular situation is very difficult. Now, I'm sure you probably run the gamut of some clients are easier to work with, others are more difficult. You make a choice each day to be involved in that, and so it's important that we know why we come in each day and what we're intending to do. All right, next slide, Ali. This is an equation I put together as I thought about caring for others. There's care is in the middle, as you notice, okay? On the left side of the screen is the word self, but it's in smaller letters. On the right side of the screen is the word others, which is in larger letters. So self-care and other care go together in being a helping professional. The problem is, with a typical equation, self is low and small. Aren't we trained typically to take care of others more sometimes? It's what we're here for, as I was saying. It's what we're doing. We wanna help people. But what gets left out sometimes is the self part, or it's not emphasized as much. That's why some of the things we do today and we talk about, I want to encourage you to do them for yourselves to prevent the compassion fatigue that comes from this kind of equation. Next slide now. What we're looking for better is a blending of self-care and other care. We want a balance, and maybe the word self even should be a little bigger. What I have on the screen here is the word care in the middle, and on the left, self is as big as care and others, because I'm saying that a better equation for helping professionals is I'm caring for myself equally or greater than I'm caring for others. Next slide. We want to balance the scale. On the slide, I have a picture of a scale where one end is down and one end is higher. That's the not so good equation. When the care of others is greater than the care for myself, when I'm going into their situation, because we're entering into a client's life, whether we realize it or not. And we can get out of balance easily. Next slide. This slide has a young lady kind of laid out on the ground, and a gas tank gauge above her where the arrow is reading empty and not full. This is what happens when we embrace the equation where we're caring more about others than ourselves. And you know what? You know when you're doing that. Like for myself, I know like, oh, I'll fit this client in and I'll fit that client in, and I won't leave time to eat. I won't leave time for lunch. I won't leave a break because these folks need to be seen. Wonderful. All well and good. But I have to have some time in there for myself. And I always tell my staff that you're going to have to manage your schedule. Your schedule is going to manage you. And my guess is that might be true for you too. Next slide. All right. We don't develop compassion fatigue in a vacuum. In other words, it's not just about us feeling tired or worn out or not managing our schedules. It's more than that. Because the helper and client relationship is an interactive relationship. Here's what I mean by that. When you work with someone, whether it's in the office, whether it's in a home, wherever you are with them, there's an exchange of energy between you and the client. It's not just two talking people there, you know? There's an exchange of energy. And that's important because we're creating something more than just two people talking, if that makes sense. Did you ever hear the saying, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts? There's a synergy between you and the client, which impacts your energy and it impacts the client's energy. Now, psychologists have taught us this, that what goes on in the minds of clients is sometimes hidden from them, but they very powerfully influence another person's behavior and attitudes, which are ours as helping professionals. So we influence one another, and there's a dynamic that's going on between us. Next slide. When I was in high school, a couple years ago, I was in physics class. I wasn't a fan of physics. You know, I just didn't float my boat, you know what I mean? But I learned two things in physics class that I always remembered. The first one, the teacher said to us, you know, nothing that's over 28 pounds can fly on its own. And I raised my hand and I said, Mr. D, does that mean Superman really can't fly? And he looked at me and he said, yes, Mr. Malloy. He looked over his glasses. Yes, Mr. Malloy. It means Superman cannot fly. So I learned that in physics class. I'm passing that along to you now so that you have that piece of information. But the other thing I learned in physics class was the way that energy flows. And I've never forgotten that. I'm grateful for Mr. D teaching this because I think of it in my work with clients all the time. Energy flows from high to low, okay? When it's winter time and you open a window, what do people say to you? Close the window. You're letting a draft, you know, you're letting a draft in. That's not typically really accurate as far as energy goes. What's happening is the warmth of the room, the warmth energy is a higher vibration than the cold energy. So the warmth is going out, which is causing the cold to come in. So energy flows from more greater energy to lower energy. And that's how it is when we are with our clients. When they are grieving over something, when they are depressed about something, when they are sad about something, when they are just generally not feeling good, you are going to be impacted by that when you're with your client, because you are a higher energy if you're not into those lower type feelings. That makes sense. And the energy is going to flow from you to the client. And I'll bet you know that. I'll bet you feel that. Sometimes do you feel kind of drained when you're with a client? You probably do. I know I do. And it's something I keep in mind and trying to pay attention to while I'm with a client. And again, we'll talk about ways to do that too, pay attention. Okay, next slide. This is a little box, and inside the box it says, do you ever feel like your body's check engine light has been on and you're still driving around like, nah, it'll be fine? Maybe you do that with your car. That check engine light comes on. I'm thinking, well, the car's got to work it out somehow, you know, can't be anything wrong here. But eventually you go into the mechanic and you say, check engine light's on. We have check engine lights. We need to know when our check engine light comes on and we need to take some kind of a break or so. Okay, next slide. So compassion fatigue. I mentioned earlier, I think of it as vicarious trauma. Vicarious meaning that we're impacted by someone else's trauma, okay? So maybe you haven't thought of compassion fatigue as a trauma experience before. I'm laying it out there today that it is. So it's the emotional strain of working with those who've experienced trauma or loss and are seeking help for other issues. It's also a desensitization over time that's caused by overexposure to trauma and loss. Now, that's not bad in and of itself. Sometimes when we're with a client, we need to detach a little bit to take care of ourselves. The problem is if we get stuck in that situation where we're feeling really detached from our clients and we don't make that connection as well, where it's more of a chronic state, that's when we know that we're in a state of some compassion fatigue. When it regularly happens that we feel disconnected and desensitized to what our clients are going through. Let's go to the next slide. Compassion fatigue comes from absorbing others' trauma. Many experts have studied this and have found that it isn't just about the work we do, it's about the trauma that is carried and that we feel vicariously. Contrast that with burnout. Burnout's more of a feeling of being worn out. I think burnout might be thought of as a later stage of compassion fatigue, but it's not necessarily from the client's pain or trauma. It's from other situations. Excuse me. It could be from external things. It could be from pressures, pressures from the job, pressures at home, lack of funding, working conditions, anything like that. What's going on in the world? You know, those kinds of things. Those all add to our stress level. And it is about stress, you know, that promotes some kind of burnout. Next slide. So this slide talks about compassion fatigue versus empathy, an important distinction that we need to make. Empathy is the ability to imagine what it's like to be in someone else's shoes and to care for that person. In other words, we're imagining the feelings of the person, what that must be like, you know, what that must be like to suffer some kind of a loss. Compassion fatigue comes from suffering with the person, along with a desire to alleviate the suffering. You really can feel another person's pain. And so compassion fatigue comes from feeling that and regularly feeling that, the loss that they have, what they've experienced. So I want to distinguish those two. That's an important one to make. We need to empathize with our clients and put ourselves in their shoes. We are going to feel their pain, as I'm saying, but we need to know that there's two ways of doing that. One is to step back a little, and I can still empathize. Next slide. So this slide talks about the stages of compassion fatigue. Remember earlier when I said there's a continuum? You know, it starts with enthusiasm, high hopes for the job, high energy, maybe some unrealistic expectations, you know, when I'm working with people. We all do that. We start a new position. We start doing things we haven't done before, and we're really excited about it. That's a wonderful place to be, and that's where we start. As we move down a continuum of compassion fatigue, though, and we're absorbing this trauma, compassion, fatigue, grief from other people, from people we're working with, we start to progress into a stage called stagnation. And that's low energy. It's comes across as cynicism, job dissatisfaction sometimes. I find that around here, in our helping profession, wishing that a client wouldn't show. Those things start to happen. And I think some of those things are normal. I mean, I think we all get somewhere on a continuum of compassion fatigue. But again, it's recognizing it and knowing when you want to try to turn the car around. Okay, let's go to the next slide. This slide shows the third and the fourth parts of the compassion fatigue continuum. The third one is called frustration. And by the way, these were done in a book by Edelwich and Brodsky in 1982, two researchers that studied a lot about compassion fatigue. The frustration stage is where you start to question your effectiveness. What am I doing here? Am I making a difference? Am I helping? You know, it's a sense of pessimism sometimes. And then finally, compassion fatigue can move to that fourth stage, which is apathy. And sometimes we think of apathy as a choice, and I guess it is sometimes, but in a continuum of progression of compassion fatigue, empathy is a last stage where maybe you lose the excitement for a job that you once loved or for something that you once loved and you don't have that same love for it, okay? And that's where we get to, that's where it progresses into some burnout, you know, when compassion fatigue just continues to go. All right, let's go to the next slide. So what are some signs of compassion fatigue? I've got some signs listed on these next few slides. Symptoms, I should say, perhaps. Signs and symptoms of compassion fatigue. Okay, one of them is feeling burdened by the suffering of others. You ever feel that? Another is blaming others for their suffering. You know, we see the pain of others and we think, well, they brought it on or they shouldn't have done this or that. You know, we seek someone to blame. A third sign of compassion fatigue is isolating yourself. I worked with someone recently who said, when I'm done with work for the day, I just got to go home and crawl into bed. I think that's fine sometimes. When that's chronically going on, you know something else is going on. You know you're getting into a deeper stage of compassion fatigue. And then another sign is loss of pleasure in life. The things that you enjoy, you feel like you don't have the time and energy for them because it takes so much energy to do your work with people. Let's go to the next slide. So four more signs or symptoms of compassion fatigue. One of them is self-blame. I should have done more. I should have been able to see that coming. I should have been able to help that client. Sign of compassion fatigue. Another is physical and mental fatigue. I was referencing that earlier, the person that just wanted to go to bed. Another sign is bottling up your emotions. The compassion fatigue that you have needs to be talked about with a colleague, with a supervisor. You know, it needs to get out in some way, but bottling up the emotions makes it stronger. Difficulty concentrating is another one. Let's go to the next slide. Three others: irritability, feelings of self-contempt. Feelings of self-contempt, you know? What I was saying earlier about I should have done more, I should have been able to do more. Well, self-contempt comes from the chronic state of thinking, I didn't do enough, I'm not good. You know, that's about you personally then. I'm not good enough. I'm not, you know, there's something wrong with me. And then difficulty sleeping can be another one. Next slide. Staying up too late. I was talking to someone who said, well, if I stay up late, tomorrow comes later. Sounds kind of logical in a way, but it's going to come, you know, whether you like it or not, and you're just going to be more tired the next day. Headaches and substance use are two other signs. Next slide. As are frequently complaining, feelings of hopelessness and powerlessness and bottling up your emotions are signs of that. Next slide. And other researched causes of compassion fatigue, the accumulation of stress, you know, not in just your work, but in all these areas of your life where you find stress, lack of effective interpersonal relationships, and the lack of awareness that you're in a process of compassion fatigue. Let's go to the next slide. I found a measuring tool. I'd never seen this before until I was preparing some of this, what I was going to talk about today. There's a professional quality of life scale that you can find at proqol.org, proqol.org. And there's 30 questions developed by a researcher that's broken into three areas: compassion satisfaction, burnout, and secondary traumatic stress. And it helps you kind of measure where might I be at. Now, I haven't done this this measuring tool, just became aware of it, but I may take a shot at it and see what it shows. So that's what we know about that. So I want you to just take just 1 minute. I want you to think back or look back over what we talked about as some of those signs of compassion fatigue. You know, the self-blame or the feeling I should have done enough, headaches, irritability, not wanting to go to bed, those sorts of things that we just talked about. I want you to jot down, are there any that I'm seeing in myself? Just take a minute to do that. As you do that, ask yourself, what does this mean? Do you see more signs than you thought you might have? Are there more there than what you're comfortable with? You know, as you think about them? Okay. So I just wanted you to, you know, personalize that a little bit and ask yourself, you know, am I on a continuum somewhere? Okay, so let's talk about grief and trauma. This slide says, but what about grief and trauma? And I'm going to ask, well, how are grief, trauma, and compassion fatigue related? Earlier I said that they are, and you can glean by some of what I said already the ways they might be related. But when I'm talking about trauma, by the way, we can talk about a big trauma like a car crash, or abuse of some sorts, you know, traumatic experiences. But there's also what's sometimes referred to as a small t trauma, things that personally impact someone in a traumatic way. Being shamed in class, something like that is a trauma. And it's really important that it could be an event or it could be a lack of something. Let's go to the next slide. Grief, on the other hand, is an intense feeling of loss or perceived loss. And I wrote some different kinds of grief up on this slide. So the slide says grief is an intense feeling of loss or perceived loss. There's complicated grief. That's where you have maybe depression with the grief, and both need to be treated. There's traumatic grief, where a trauma has happened. Someone died traumatically, let's say, and you need to deal with both the trauma and the grief feelings, the feelings of loss. There's also disenfranchised grief, where I'm grieving something that is not socially acceptable to grieve. For instance, let's say someone had an affair with someone and their affair partner died. Well, they're not supposed to be grieving that person. The affair was a secret. That's called disenfranchised grief because the person still has that feeling of grief, but they cannot mourn, you know, because of their situation. And then there's also developmental grief. And developmental grief has to do with loss of something. It could be a loss of a limb. It could be loss of sight. It could be loss of hearing. So I think you probably see a lot of developmental grief in your work. And all grief needs to be worked through in some way. And you probably work with some people who haven't worked through all their grief. Okay? So some kind of a loss. Grief has to go somewhere, either internally or externally. And it's going to continue to affect us if it doesn't. So the question is, do you have grief reactions that complicate your work? My guess is that you do. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, good. So, do grief reactions complicate your work? Let's go to the next slide. What do I mean by grief reactions? Grief affects us physically, emotionally, cognitively, socially, and spiritually. So I'm going to briefly run through a few of those things. Again, because, you know, the clients you work with, they're grieving, show these things. Some of the physical things with grief: headaches, body aches, fatigue, insomnia, clumsiness. And folks, what I'm suggesting here is that some of the grief that clients are experiencing, the developmental losses or whatever kind of losses they have, these things are going to affect you. The client's physical reactions are going to affect you in some way, and it contributes to the compassion fatigue that you can feel. Let's go to the next slide. Some other physical reactions is on this slide. Heart palpitations, shortness of breath, nausea, dizziness. Let's go to the next slide. We have emotional reactions to grief. Your clients are experiencing these: mood swings, intense sadness, depression, anger, guilt, or hopelessness. That's what I have on this slide. You know, and again, energy moves from high to low. So you have a client with depression, you're going to walk out of that encounter feeling something and maybe feeling a little drained. If you're not aware of the process going on, it promotes compassion fatigue. Next slide. We have cognitive reactions to grief. Forgetfulness, mental fog, and ruminating is on this slide. People don't realize how much energy grief takes, and forgetfulness is one of the things. I can't tell you how many clients that come in and say to me, oh, I keep forgetting stuff. I forget where I put my keys. I forget this or that. And I tell them, you know, that is a part of grief. And that's such a comfort for them to know that. It's, oh, okay. Let's go to the next slide. Couple more cognitive reactions are in this slide. The thinking that you're going crazy when you're grieving. The confusion. The difficulty making decisions. Next slide. Social reactions to grief. There's withdrawal. You know, I don't want to be with people. There's isolation. And there's avoidance of others. Now, I want you to think for a second. Does that sound familiar to what we put forth as some of the signs of compassion fatigue? So a grieving client may be grieving a developmental loss, or grieving that their child is not able to see or hear or was born without a limb. You know, they're experiencing grief, and you're going to experience some of that. We talked about withdrawal or isolation and all as part of compassion fatigue. See how it connects? Let's go to the next slide. Some spiritual reactions. Blaming God. That's all normal. That's all normal with grief and loss. And the search for meaning. We all need to make meaning out of our experiences. When people are grieving, they need to make meaning out of it. So what does it mean that we've suffered a developmental loss? What does it mean, you know, and how do the parents reconfigure right? Their thinking and their parenting styles. Okay, let's go to the next slide, Allie. Couple other things about the grief. It's a subjective experience. There's no right or wrong way to grieve. The key is learning to live with grief and loss, and for grief to be transformed into a new experience. Now, I will tell you that part of why I wanted to put some information about grief in here is because my understanding is that you lost one or two people recently, or people that some people were close to. And I just wanted to say that grief doesn't know any time, and grief impacts you personally. It impacts the workplace, coming into work, and it's okay. You're going to have different reactions with grief, the physical, the emotional, the cognitive, etc. It might be harder to do your job at times. That can contribute to compassion fatigue. Just know that there's a reason for grief. We need to mourn our grief. Mourning is the external things we do with our grief, talking about it, having services, crying, etc., that we need to do to move our grief along. And if you're experiencing some of that due to your losses that you've had, it'll impact you. But know that, you know, grief takes time. We can't say, 3 weeks, you should be good. You know, it doesn't work like that. Everybody's different. We all experience our grief differently. Let's go to the next slide. Okay. I kind of talked about this one, so I want to go to the next slide in the service of time. Just a couple brief things about trauma then. One of the big researchers in trauma, Alan Shore, talked about these five areas of grief, and they are of trauma. They're neglect, that's where something isn't present that should be. Abuse, that's where something happens that shouldn't happen. Events that are witnessed, a traumatic accident. Betrayal is a grief, could be any, or is a trauma, any kind of betrayal. And prolonged distress can be a trauma. Let's think about that one for a second. When you work with people, you're going to be involved in their distress and in what they have going on in their lives. And it's a prolonged time that you work with them. And you got to keep in mind that that can impact you. Let's go to the next one. Trauma is not an event, it's a reaction to an event. So let's not underestimate what the people we work with are experiencing. They might experience something as a trauma. Maybe it's a small t trauma, it's still a trauma. Okay? And all trauma involves grief. You're going to be impacted by that. Let's go to the next slide now. Okay. So trauma doesn't experience, it doesn't process like a regular memory. That's what this slide talks about. It talks about the cognitive center of the brain shutting down. So when someone's traumatized by one of their losses or a developmental loss, it can recur because it's a trauma, if that makes sense. Because trauma isn't stored as a memory. It's stored as a feeling and a memory in the emotional centers of the brain. That's why people have flashbacks with their trauma. That's why people continue to blame themselves with their trauma, etc. Okay, let's go to the next. Three areas of the brain are talked about in this slide. And I'm gonna pass over this one, again, for the sake of time. But the point that I want to make in this section is we don't develop compassion fatigue alone. We develop it in the context of others and in the context of a job, because we're taking on the stress. We're taking on the grief, we're taking on the trauma. When you're involved with another person in some way, it comes with how we interact with other people. Next slide, Alan. So, what are we gonna do about this? How are we gonna take care of ourselves? Remember the equation that I talked about earlier? If you can picture a balance scale, and the self-care is lower than the care of others, in the work that we do sometimes, how am I going to balance it out better so that I don't end up in a state of compassion fatigue, from my work with others? Let's go to the next slide. This shows that balance scale again, where one end of the scale is down, the other is higher. And what I'm saying is that compassion fatigue and self-care are inversely proportional. Okay? What that means is that the less I care for myself over time, the greater is my compassion fatigue going to be. The less I care for myself, the greater the compassion fatigue. Let's move to the next one. A true or false question is on this slide. True or false? In helping professions, we are taught to put our clients first. Would you write your answer down on your paper or so? Ooh, I sounded like a school teacher there, didn't I? Would you write or consider your answer to that? True or false? In helping professions, we're taught to put our clients first. I could ask for a show of hands if we were in the room together. And some of you would say, yep, we're taught that way. And you know what? I think you'd be right, because I was taught that way too. And yes, we are the helping professionals. Yes, we need to put our clients first. But boy, we better be right there with them, taking care of ourselves too. And it's our jobs to do that. Let's go to the next slide, Allie. Now, this slide shows a picture of a oxygen mask is what that is. Very apropos nowadays. You know, we hear a lot about that. But this particular kind of mask is on an airplane. If you've ever flown, the flight attendants go in the front and they say, well, if we have a loss of pressure and oxygen, put your mask on first before you put your kids or anyone else's on. And they say that for a reason, because if you're out cold, you can't help anyone else. Well, think about this metaphor for the helping relationship. And I'm going to ask you, how do you put your oxygen mask on when you're working with people so that you care for yourself as much as you're caring for them? Because our natural way of thinking is, I got to care for my clients more. Next slide. This slide says your relationship with yourself sets the tone for every other relationship you have. Something to keep in mind. Let's go to the next slide. So this slide is the beginning of where we're going to talk about strategies for care of self. I'm proposing five areas that I work with in care of self. And this is a little diagram that I found that actually, you know, diagram them well. So on the slide is a diagram. In the middle, there's a circle. And it says, the goal is to feel vital and balanced, free from depression and anxiety. You could put in there free from compassion fatigue as well. And there's five areas that we want to think about when we're working with people. One is physical self-care. Boy, it sounds like grief, doesn't it? One is physical self-care. One is mental emotional self-care. One is people support. So social self-care, I'll call that. One is lifestyle self-care. And one is spiritual self-care. And let me just say spiritual, I'm not talking about a religious denomination. It can be that. But I'm talking about a connection with others and someone greater than yourself. Okay? So that's what's on that slide. Let's start talking about them. But I don't feel like caring for myself. I'm in the midst of all this. I got five clients to see. I've got all this. I got to get my work done. I don't feel like it. Next slide. Remember the Nike slogan? Nike's slogan was, just do it. That comes into play here. These things we're going to talk about here for self-care, just do it. Next slide. So I put this slide up here again, reminding us of these five areas: physical, lifestyle, mental, emotional, people support, and spiritual care. Break your self-care down into those five areas. Let's take each one. Okay. Next slide. Let's talk about ways to physically care for yourself when you work with people to try to balance out better and not progress down the compassion fatigue continuum. Nutrition, sleep, food, water, breathing. These are all necessary physical things. Next slide. Here's the problem. We have this slide talks about the three parts of a brain, okay? One of them is called a reptilian brain. That's the part of our brain that only wants to keep us alive. It's concerned with breathing, eating, sleeping, avoidance of pain, okay? It triggers fight or flight if any of those are threatened, right? So think about that for a second. We have a primitive part of our brains that triggers fight or flight when we're not sleeping enough, when we're not eating enough, you know, when we're not breathing fully. Okay, let's go to the next slide. So as you can see, I mean, Maslow put together this hierarchy of needs for a reason. Our primary survival needs for food, water, and safety, our most primal needs, can get triggered if we're not taking care of ourselves by eating, sleeping, drinking enough water, and all those things. Do you see what I'm saying? I wish I could be in the same room with you for a second, because I like to really make this point that when you're depriving yourself of water, food, you know, you're not busy eating, you're triggering the primitive part of your brain that triggers fight or flight, which triggers stress, which triggers compassion fatigue. Boy, it all fits together, doesn't it? Let's go to the next slide. So again, these particular areas on this slide, nutrition, sleep, food, water, breathing, are crucial. Let's go to the next slide. Breathing, a simple breathing technique, when you're between clients, when you're with the clients, is to take deeper, slower breaths. Breathe in to the count of 7, breathe out to the count of 11. Research shows this kind of breathing helps calm you, calms the survival part of your brain, it calms the nervous system, and promotes, you know, more comfort, okay? Scanning the room and focusing is what I have on there too. And focusing means paying attention to your feet on the floor. You know, when I'm with a client and I'm getting involved in that with that client, I come back to my body and I feel myself sitting in a chair. I breathe. I feel my hands on the arms of the chair, you know. I want to come back to my body and take care of myself, because that's one of the ways I can get lost in the other person and their feelings and their and you know, their traumas and etc. Let's go to the next slide, Ali. Mental emotional self-care is on this slide. Positive self-talk slogans, you know, tell you when you start to say I didn't do enough, tell yourself you're not responsible for the other person's life. You're responsible for doing your best to help someone, not what they do with that help. Compassion fatigue happens when we don't think we see results. Sometimes we're just planting seeds with people, and you have to be okay with that, you know. We think 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts a day. Researchers have shown that. If these thoughts are mainly negative, I'm not good enough, I'm not doing enough, what's that going to do to your self-esteem? What's that going to do to your sense of compassion fatigue? It's going to flood you and overwhelm you. So we can train ourselves to think more positively. Here's something that I want to encourage you to do. And try this for a few weeks. When you wake up in the morning, think about 10 things that you're grateful for. 10 things that you're grateful for. And it could be anything. It could be, well, I had this great hamburger yesterday. Doesn't matter. It could be, well, I had this great talk with my friend. Doesn't matter. 10 things you're grateful for. I guarantee you that if you consider each morning 10 things that you're grateful for, and you do that faithfully, you're going to become more of an optimist. You're going to find that you're going to teach your brain to think in a more positive direction. You can train your brain to think differently, you know? And again, I mean, there's great brain research that shows that. Let's go to the next slide. Other types of caring for yourself are listed on this slide, mentally and emotional. A mood journal, you know, talking to someone each day about, you know, here's where I'm at, here's my feelings, you know? Sometimes psychotherapy, sometimes working through your own grief, things that are grieving you. Or I wrote in there talking about countertransference, counseling term that we use that the counselors and social workers are aware of. It's my stuff that gets triggered when I'm with another client. Without being aware of that, it adds to your burdens and adds to your compassion fatigue. Let's go to the next slide. I mentioned a morning gratitude list. I have that on this slide. Journaling out your feelings. Okay? But another key is boundaries between work and home. I don't know if your job is one in which you take work home. Mine is sometimes, and I have to be careful to set aside time scheduled for that so that it doesn't move into other areas of my life. I found that's not good for me when I just let it blend or unschedule it. You know, my position sometimes I have to do some work at home. So if you have to do that, we need to set boundaries, you know? Okay, some other strategies. Limit the amount of news that you watch or listen to. Try to come to the terms that pain is part of everybody's life, as I said. We're not responsible for that. We can't control their suffering. Okay, let's go to the next slide. In the lifestyle, in the people support self-care area, time with support of other people. We need that. Whether it's, boy, just sitting down and having a meal together or venting, I'm a fan of that. You know, sometimes a support group, hobbies, crafts, book clubs, things like that. We have to go there. And sometimes a people self-support is to have a happy place. Go somewhere with, you know, a friend of yours who, you know, you like to watch sunsets together. I don't know, something like that. You know, it's a happy place for you. These are things that fill our gas tank a little bit. Lifestyle changes, looking at structure and routine in our lives, relaxation, setting goals for ourselves, taking time in nature is a lifestyle self-care thing you can do. Spending time with a little child, if you have a family member, complete fun. Well, unless you're babysitting the child or something like that, and they're, you know, they're keeping you up and, you know, upsetting you and stuff. I have a grandson, new grandson, so this is on my mind, you know. Next slide. Ways that you can care for yourself spiritually is, you know, connecting with something bigger than yourself. Meditation, yoga, contemplation, which contemplation is just sitting quietly, you know. It's sitting in nature. It's listening. It's, you know, there's lots of apps now and stuff that have real calming music. Sitting and listening to that, you know. Next slide. Question being, what is it that replenishes your spirit? And are you doing enough of it? And if you're not, then why not? What can you do differently? Okay, let's go to the next slide. Just like burnout and compassion fatigue have a cumulative effect, so does self-care. The more you use these physical, emotional, spiritual, social, cognitive ways, you know, doing gratitude lists, talking with people, venting out your feelings, getting enough sleep, getting enough to drink, water that is, the better is your self-care. You know, it all fits together. And again, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, meaning when you're with someone, you're absorbing from them. So you have to find a way to replenish your gas tank in some way so that you're more in a state of compassion, satisfaction. So that's where we're at. I want to take some questions, but again, stressing, think physical, emotional, spiritual, you know. Use those grounding things when you're with a client. You know, feel your feet on the floor, breathe. Keep yourself aware of your physical self, of your emotional self, what you're thinking when you're with a client. When you're done, go out and do something fun. Relax. These are all things that need to happen with compassion fatigue. You can affect how you feel. You can affect how much compassion fatigue you take on by doing some of the opposite things. I'm going to stop talking and ask if there are some questions.
Okay, Patrick, I am looking at the chat here real quick. It looks like we had a request from one of our employees if we could email them the slide particular to the different areas of self-care. Would you be okay with that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. I heard a couple. I need that charts in this list. Let's see. We also had someone agree very much about limit or stop watching and reading the news if it's causing you more stress. I think that's pretty timely advice.
It is.
Oh, Patrick, we have a question. Do we have a resource list for meditation, nature videos, and things to reduce stress? Mm-hmm. Do you have something like that?
I don't have a list, but there are apps on your, if you have a smartphone, I imagine it's on the, any kind of smartphone, you know, in those app stores that are about mm-hmm. relaxation and that are about calming. And you can download some really cool things. There's one that helps with sleep that has a bilateral stimulation, you know, clicks mm-hmm. back and forth, because that helps calm the brain. It's like rocking when you're rocking a baby, mm-hmm. you know, when we have back and forth sounds and it's set to like the seashore sounds or something like that.
Yep.
People really have said that it helps them get to sleep. Yep. So app stores are great for things like that. You can also Google it. Go to, you know, YouTube has different videos and things like that too.
Yep. Also, I would mention too, I know I've used my smart speaker. If any of you have Google Home or the Amazon Alexa kind of thing, where it will play guided meditation or just nature sounds, those kinds of things, which are great. Trey, you mentioned something about ASMR. I'm going to ask you to unmute and tell me, what does ASMR stand for?
Well, unfortunately, I can't say what it stands for. It's incredibly, it's this long string of words that sound very scientific that I can't even remember or reiterate. That if you Google ASMR, it sounds very confusing. But the point is that the videos are supposed to relax you and give you what's called tingles. You know, like okay. that feeling you get in your spine was like, ooh, that feels really good, you know. That sort of thing. That's their purpose. So, gotcha. Yeah, they're really good.
Cool. Thank you, Trey. We've got another question, Patrick. This one's specifically for you. Do you think blowing off steam with your coworker helps compassion fatigue, or does it reinforce it and make it worse? Is there a way to blow off steam or vent with coworkers to make sure that you're reducing your compassion fatigue and not increasing it?
I have an idea about that. It comes down to intent, being intentional in what you're doing. If you're getting together just to complain, I don't think that serves you well. But talking with someone and saying, I need to vent about something, I don't need to complain about it. I don't even need a response from you. I just need you to hear me. Here's what I'm struggling with. I think that promotes a completely different experience, and your brain knows that too. I do.
Great.
I had a question once along that line where someone raised their hand and said, is it okay to go out and have a beer or so with a coworker? And I said, well, kind of depends. Same kind of answer, you know. There's nothing wrong with relaxing and stuff, but you know, that can be a problem coping skill at the same time. So,
yeah, great. All right. I don't see any other questions in the chat. Anyone, if I missed your question in the chat, you can always email me and I can get in touch with Patrick if we need to consult a little bit with him. It is also 1:00. So I think we have used up our 1 hour. Patrick, thank you again for joining us and talking about a really important topic. I'm seeing lots of applause on the screen. I hope you are too. Also, one other way to help you deal with your compassion fatigue is use your EAP program. Use your Ease at Work, because that is what why we provide that program to our staff. And guys, this is a benefit that is yours to use. So please remember that. All right, everyone. Thank you so much.